All right, it is 1:17 here on The Shilling Show. 977-1070 is the phone number for this hour if you'd like to join us. Our guest is the president of Murata Wealth Management, David Murata, and you could check him out online at emurata.com. That's E-M-A-R-O-T-T-A.com. Lots of great information there. And Dave, welcome back to The Shilling Show. It seems like it's been a long time since you've been here, but we're so pleased that you are able to join us about once a month to talk about these important issues.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Now, today I have promised the audience and we're going to talk about college, the value of college, and planning for college. This is something that I think a lot of people put off. A lot of people just think, well, you know, it'll be here someday and we'll deal with it. But it has kind of come to the point where you better start thinking of it well in advance because of how much it costs. But I first want to start with the whole issue of the importance of a college education, because I think there are many people who think it's, I mean, it is one of a number of options, but they kind of think of it as an equal option of doing many other things. So why is a college education important?
Yeah, I've seen the value of a college education just about from every angle you can. When I graduated from Stanford University in 1982, got married, my wife and I moved to Eugene, Oregon. And 1982 was the year that Eugene, Oregon was featured on the cover of Time magazine as the worst hit city in the nation in terms of the recession of 82. It had 35% unemployment, and we were looking for our first jobs out of college. So there were no entry-level jobs. I remember applying for a job at Taco Bell, and there were maybe 500 people in the parking lot waiting for one job at Taco Bell. And they only had one question that they yelled to the crowd, and that is, if you don't have prior Taco Bell experience, go home.
Wow.
So we applied for all different kinds of entry-level jobs, but it was because of my Stanford degree in electrical engineering that I got a job teaching computer science at Lane Community College. It was the best job I applied for, and without my degree, I never would have gotten it.
So this is a lesson for a lot of people, and I think, you know, as I look around Charlottesville, and this is not unique to Charlottesville, but I'm just bringing it home since we're here, I see a lot of people who I know have a tremendous amount of potential who are working in jobs that are perhaps not, you know, they're below the potential of the individual, but they're stuck there because of that. I mean, is that a trend that you see even getting worse, so to speak, that people will have a harder and harder time competing without the degree?
Yeah, the U.S. economy is changing so much with globalization. Globalization is a net positive, but it does a net positive for the entire country. But it does mean that there are certain jobs that are dead end jobs and shrinking in the United States, and there are other jobs which actually pay more and are much better jobs to have, but they require a certain amount of training. And if you think about it, education is an investment in yourself, and you are the means of your family's production. So it's like building a factory is equivalent to investing in yourself for education.
It's one of the things, and I love this idea of investing yourself. It's one of the things that really bothers me about the living wage issue, which has been certainly talked about a lot locally. And it's that if that's what someone's aiming for, and they think I've made it when I hit, you know, whatever it is, $11.25 an hour, I see that as really a tamping on or holding down human potential. That's not what somebody should aspire to, is it?
No, the best argument I've ever heard about minimum wage is that an employer is not going to pay any more than they think the employee is worth. So when you set a high minimum wage, employers have to cut back on something. And what they end up cutting back on is the training that the employee needs more than they need the paycheck. So they can get training that is tax-free from their employer, or they can raise the minimum wage and they're going to cut the training out. And most people will tell you that for a minimum wage employee, they are not minimum wage very long because there's a constant cycle. So there's very few people who actually get a minimum wage job and then stay at minimum wage for more than a year. And so they're constantly moving up. So when an employer has the freedom to not pay them the wage and pay them instead health care benefits and job training, that's actually worth more to the individual because it's tax-free.
Absolutely, and we love to see people bettering themselves, and a college education is a great way to do it. What is the difference between now and, say, the 40s and the 50s? You mentioned globalization, but that was a time when fewer people went to college?
Yeah, very few people used to go to college. So some people say that the value of a college education has been diminished, because it used to be if you went to college, you were America's best and brightest. And now when everyone's going to college, there's less of a distinction between a college education. Still, a 2002 study showed that college graduates make on average $1 million more in their lifetime than non-college graduates. The biggest distinction is between high school graduates and those who graduate from a two-year community college degree. So even a two-year community college degree gains you a tremendous amount of buying power. And I mentioned when in 1982 I got a job teaching computer science at Lane Community College. Eugene had about 35% unemployment. I was 21 years old. My average age student was 35 years old, and he was usually an ex-logger who'd been laid off the logging industry because of the recession, and he had 2 years to get a programming degree and to get back out into what was the booming business of the time, this new thing called the computer,
yeah.
And the year before, the IBM PC had just been released. And so our students could leave a logging career and in 2 years get a better paying job in the computer industry, and that's the value of education.
It is, and it's great to hear those stories, because I think that it could be played out again and again for a lot of people who do feel stuck. I know that we have education here, and there's some technology jobs that pay substantially more, maybe twice as much or three times as much as a minimum or living wage job in the city. And with 2 years of education at the local community college, you could go and get that job as long as your grades are good, and that's the way people move up in life.
Yeah.
News Radio 1070 WINA, it is 1:24 here on The Shilling Show. You've read him for many years, about 10 years now, in the Daily Progress on Mondays. David Morata is our guest, and we're talking about the importance of a college education and also how you can plan for it. Now, a couple other things on college before we move off of the actual importance of it. Does the particular school matter? I know there's a lot of people who are certainly concerned with going to a big-name college, and I know there are other people who say, you know, just get the degree and then go out and do the work. How important should people place that?
There's certainly some truth in both. My Stanford degree helped open doors for the next decade and a half, 2 decades, and still today holds gravitas. We have the University of Virginia right here in Charlottesville, and the University of Virginia is one of the top-ranked schools in the entire nation. And if you're afraid that you can't get into the University of Virginia, there's a backdoor entrance to the University of Virginia, which is one of the least expensive ways of getting in. If you go to PVCC for 2 years and get good grades, you're automatically guaranteed acceptance into the University of Virginia or any other Virginia public school. And it is the least expensive way to get what is the top degree in this entire area, and you could argue the country.
I thought that was fantastic, and I think that's a relatively new program that they put in within the past few years. But it's a great cooperation between PVCC and the Virginia University and College system. But also for people living here, again, who thought, you know, I'm just not going to be able to make it, because my wife worked on the committee over there, and she saw, I mean, it's pretty hard to get in there if you're just thrown in with everybody else. But if you keep your grades up and do it, there is a path for you right there.
Yeah, the University of Virginia, my daughter is, this is her second day of school. She's a senior out at Western High School. She'd like to go to the University of Virginia. It's one of her top picks. And to apply from out of state is very difficult to get in. To apply in state, you have a better chance. They accept a higher percentage. To transfer from a community college, you have a 100% acceptance rate, assuming that you can prove that you can do the work at the community college level.
Yeah, and by the way, for those 2 years of community college, it costs a lot less
too,
right?
It is one of the least expensive ways that you can get a good education.
The last point that I want to talk about regarding colleges before we go on to the cost of the whole thing is, what about grades? You know, is college the sort of thing that you just go to and get through, or do the grades have a lasting impact on your future?
They did a study recently I was very intrigued by, and that is they didn't look at grades, but they looked at what you majored in as being an indicator of how much a college education was worth. And they found that obviously, those who majored in biology and were pre-law ended up pre-med ended up having tremendous incomes. If you were political science and economics or history and you ended up being pre-law, that sort of ended up having a tremendous impact. And if you were economics and pre-business, then obviously you ended up having a much greater income. Aside from those sort of professional graduate degrees, if you were in engineering, it was the quickest way to a high income degree. So the sciences and the engineering degrees are still high. If you majored in some of the less hard sciences, if you majored in psychology and literature and things like that, it had less of an impact on your degree. And so a college degree, you have to think about in two terms. One, to teach you to think, to teach you to communicate, to teach you to write. And then second, it's an investment in you trying to do training for what you want to do with your life. And so kids who know what that is, generally the college degree ends up being better. But it's still a good idea because you find yourself in college. And so if you don't know what to do, college is a way of figuring out what you want to do and coming out much more motivated.
News Radio 1070 WINA. It is 128 here on The Shilling Show. We're going to head over to the 24-hour local news center, bring you some local news. And then we'll be back with more of Dave Marotta, president of Marotta Wealth Management. You can check it out online at emarotta.com. And The Shilling Show returns right after this.
You're listening to The Shilling Show on News Radio 1070, WINA.
Hey, it's 1:36 and you are with The Shilling Show, where the news is made. Thanks so much for joining us. 977-1070 is the phone number. We have lines open for you if you have questions or comments for our guest, Dave Marotta, who's the president of Marotta Wealth Management. You read his columns in the Daily Progress every Monday for many years, and we are privileged to have him join us here and make himself available to you if you have questions or comments about the topic today, which is the value of a college education and college planning. So let's go on to the cost, because a lot of people may, in fact, have some misformed idea about how much it costs to go to college these days.
Yeah, as I mentioned before, the least expensive way of going to college is starting out at a community college for 2 years and then transferring. The University of Virginia is a great sort of indicator for people to shoot for college. It's one of the more expensive schools in Virginia, but it's also public in-state. And the public in-state rate at the University of Virginia is $9,500 a year, or $38,000 for a four-year education.
Okay.
Now, you can go as high as you want in terms of schools. My alma mater, Stanford, is going to cost you $145,000 for a four-year education. you might argue it's worth it, or you might argue it's not, but you can go as far as you want. So it makes planning a little bit difficult, because you have to decide what are you trying to send your kids to, and how much are you going to pay, and how much are your kids going to pay, and or how much grandparents are going to pay. I do think it's important for parents who are not going to pay for their kids' college education to sit their kids down when they're 10 or 12 years old and say, you're going to have to pay for your own college education, and I'm going to help you figure out how to earn that money so that you can go into college with some money. Because if you don't teach your kids a trade, you might as well teach them to steal. And
yeah,
it's important. And it's also interesting because you see some parents, single moms who scrimp and save every penny, work two or three jobs and send their kids to college, and it's this amazing achievement. And then you see some middle-class families that would rather have a club membership and cell phones and the cable package.
I was going to say the $150 a month cable package is critical.
Exactly. And what they're doing there is they're deciding to have a lifestyle rather than sending their kids to college. And that's a sort of a dangerous, I think, trend.
There's a lot of things you can invest in. The $150 a month cable package is not an investment, though. We should make that very, very clear. Gary is on line number one, and there's a line open for you right now at 977-1070. Gary, welcome to The Shilling Show.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Mr. Marotta, thanks for being on this show monthly, and also thank you for your weekly column in the Daily Progress. I read it religiously. There's times when I don't understand it, but I learn something almost every time. It's very valuable. I also like your website, but unfortunately, I'm not in the financial bracket where I could afford your services, but I know you have a clientele that's a certain niche, whatever. I have a child that graduated from college last year and is now working locally, earning in the mid-30s with the college degree in the career that he wanted, that he chose. And now his problem is he's trying to figure out where to invest a little bit of money each month for his own retirement. I think he's a little bit scared of starting to invest. He knows he wants to invest. In fact, he's setting aside, $100, $150, $200 a month of his paycheck right now in a savings account until he can figure out how to take that step. And I guess what I'm looking for is some advice along that line for him, and I'll just hang up and listen.
Yeah, congratulate him on knowing that he needs to start saving money immediately. It's a rare case. It's much more beneficial to start saving money as soon as you get out of college, because marriage is being delayed. More and more kids are delaying until their late 20s and early 30s marriage, and they're also delaying until their late 20s and early 30s beginning to save for college, beginning to save for retirement and other things. And so they're finding themselves getting married late and then with very little savings and starting a family almost immediately. There are two times when you can save in life, and all of you with young kids know this. It's before kids and after kids. But the saving years during children is often deficit spending. So he is right. If he chalks away money before he starts a family, the family years will be much easier for him to weather. In terms of where to invest, we believe in asset allocation. We believe in finding investments that are as uncorrelated as possible and that are basically passive with very low fees. So you know that if you can reduce the expense ratio and fees by 1.5%, you're going to make 1.5% more in your investments. And just getting the market rate of return is sufficient to meet your needs. You don't need to get tricky. So I would say get a few good indexed funds, maybe a good U.S. index fund, maybe a little bit something that leans small in value, maybe a good foreign fund. And while you're young, you should be putting about 15% of your take-home pay away. In terms of fund families, there are certain fund families that are sort of respected for their low fees. I would say you could go to Vanguard and you could simply start putting money in. T. Rowe Price also has those. And you can get started with Vanguard or T. Rowe Price with as little as $50 a month. So if you're putting $50 a month as a dollar cost averaging from your paycheck into those, you are well ahead of the game.
Gary, thanks so much for the call. Great question. And again, congratulations to your son for getting that figured out at an age where a lot of people are still kind of going for that whole lifestyle thing. 977-1070, that leaves a line open for you in the call hall if you have questions or comments for David Murata. It's 1:42 here on The Shilling Show. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about saving money for college and when parents ought to begin. We'll be right back after this.
Hi. Start saving is when you know you're pregnant. We actually have a client who opened a 529 college savings plan before the children were born. They contributed to it for themselves, and then when the child was born, transferred the beneficiary to their children, which you can do under 529 plans. And part of the reason why they did that is because the children were being born right at the end of the year, and there are certain state tax deductions that you can take if you contribute to a 529 plan, and they wanted to get it for the prior year. But it is much better to start saving when children are young. If you start saving for the $38,000 y'all need for tuition at the University of Virginia, if you start saving the day that they're born, you'll have to save about $200 a month. If you wait until they enter the ninth grade, then you would have to save about $900 a month. Mm. So $200 versus $900. It is a lot easier to save a little bit throughout their entire lives. And what you will save will pay about half of it, and the amount that the investments will grow will pay the other half. So it's like getting college at a 50% discount if you pay along the way. If you wait until they're entering the 11th grade, then you will have to save about $1,800 a month.
Wow.
and it becomes much steeper. So if you're waiting until the last minute, it's much more difficult and much more painful.
So what's the difference between saving in a designated account and just saying, I know I have enough savings because I have investments and I'm just not going to set it aside separately?
Right. Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, if you're saving in your own investments, the government doesn't give you any kind of a break on savings. And the government is currently taxing capital gains rates at 15%. And interest at ordinary income tax rates. And so you could be paying between 15% and 32% or 35% on the amount that you're saving for your children's college education. The government is willing to give you a break if it's designated for college investments. And then all of the growth is tax-free, and when it's taken out, there's no taxable event. And so 529 plans have that benefit. Additionally, of all the 529 plans in the country, which you can invest in any state's 529 plan, the two of the five best 529 plans are right here in Virginia. So it's the Vest plan and the College America plan. We use the College America plan, but not the loaded shares. We use the no-load shares, which are called the F shares, and they have an incredible track record. They're very good. You can mix your own investment portfolio. Or you can invest in the Vest plan, and they have a number of different options there as well. Those are two of the five best plans in the country.
So I want to talk a little bit about 529 plans, because people have heard the term before but may not be very familiar with what exactly it means. Who can qualify to have a 529 plan?
Yeah, 529 plans, anyone can qualify to have one. The investment limits are $250,000, so even the rich can invest in a 529 plan, and it's a way of funding your child. Not only can it pay tuition, but it can pay room and board and books and any required fees that are associated with college. So, for example, my son is entering his junior year at North Carolina School of the Arts. He's a film major. Mm. He's learning to edit films. And his laptop computer was required by the school with all the editing software on it. That could be paid from his 529 plan.
Very nice. And I guess the other questions that would come to mind, what happens if the money is needed in the interim for an emergency? Can you get your hands on this money, or is it locked up?
There are certain ways to get it out, and there are certain penalties that you have to pay, and you might have to pay capital gains on the interest. But again, if it was outside of the portfolio, you'd have to pay capital gains on the interest anyway. So having that is not that big a deal. Some of our clients actually overfund their 529 plans for their children, knowing that whatever their children don't use, they will just transfer to their grandchildren when their grandchildren come along, and what they're funding is an educational trust, if you will, that will surface among many generations.
So if the child doesn't use all of it, you can either keep it there and designate for another person, or you could take it out, but you will pay a penalty at that point and interest at that point?
Right. A 529 plan, if the parents are the owner, they can transfer it among all of their children. They can even transfer it to cousins. And they can even use it for their own education if they wanted to go back to school. And after the child or the beneficiary graduates from college, he can use it for graduate school, or you can simply wait and transfer it to his or her children, and then it can be used for the grandchildren.
What happens if the child doesn't attend school at all for whatever reason? I mean, are there some exceptions there if the child is injured or something else?
Yeah, there are certain ways of being able to get the money out, but they're limited, and so transferring it to someone else is one way, or just taking it out and paying the penalty is a good way. If you're worried about overfunding a plan, what you can do is you can put in enough for tuition. If you have two or three children, put in enough for each of their tuition. Tuition, it turns out, is only about 30% of the total cost of college. And so if you had three children and they each had tuition only, even if only one of them went, it might pay their entire bill.
News Radio 1070 WINA, it's 1:52 here on The Shilling Show, and we're talking with Dave Marotta, and the topic today is the value of college and college planning. Who should fund a 529 and who should not?
Yeah, I will tell you that the most common people that we find funding 529 plans are grandparents. And I heard it said once, the reason why grandparents and grandchildren get along so well is they both have a common enemy. And a lot of times, grandparents are not willing to subsidize their children's large lifestyle, but they are willing to subsidize their grandchildren's educational fund. And there's an advantage in grandparents owning a 529 plan. First of all, if you save the money in the child's name, the child owns it, and if they decide not to go to college, they can just go on a spending spree. If it's owned in the parent's name, then I think they've changed it now so that it does not count against the parents for scholarships. But if it's owned in the grandparents' name, it's certainly approved that way and isn't counted anywhere. So a lot of grandparents will open 529 plans for their grandchildren. They'll contribute to it throughout the years, and then when the child goes, the grandparents are helping to subsidize the college tuition.
What about the whole issue of student loans? Are those a good idea, and who should be seeking those?
Yeah, I will tell you, there's only two. We recommend you have no loans except for two kinds of loans. One is the mortgage on your house because it's tax deductible. And the second is, if there's no other way to go to college, we believe it's worth the investment to take out student loans and go to college. So the gift you're giving your children by funding their college education is they don't graduate massively in debt. But even if that's the only way they can go to college, we would recommend they go ahead and take the student loans out, and it should pay them back throughout their lifetime because they're investing in themselves.
Is 529 plan prepaid tuition, or is that something different?
Yeah, that's something different. It turns out with our children, they had prepaid tuition, a gift from one set of grandparents, and some 529, a set of the other grandparents. The prepaid tuition covers tuition only, and it keeps up with inflation, but it doesn't grow any more than inflation. And if you use it out of state, then it is at a much reduced level. So my son, who went out of state, got, I think, about 3.2% interest on his prepaid tuition, whereas had he been in a 529 plan with that same money, it would have paid for a lot more. So prepaid tuition we don't recommend just because of that. It only keeps up with tuition, and it does not transfer out of state very well. But a 529 plan in Virginia will transfer to any college in the country.
Go ahead.
Additionally, for a 529 plan in Virginia, you can take off up to $4,000 next year off your Virginia state taxes for $4,000 being contributed into the plan. So there's a little bit of tax savings now as well.
All right. It's 1:55 here on The Shilling Show. Overall, should people price shop colleges with this tremendous? Is it a good idea to do that when you're considering where you're going to send your kid, or is that really not the main thing you ought to be looking at?
I think it is. I think it's a good question to ask. Is this college worth what I'm going to pay for in terms of the education I'm going to get? And that you'll find I think Business Week or Business News and Report does the best price for college. And I think that's a good question to ask, because as a college education costs a tremendous amount, you're faced with the decision, do you want to be in debt at the end of your college, or do you want to be debt-free? And being debt-free at the end of your college could be enough of a benefit to go to a school that might be slightly less than your first choice.
Dave Marotta, it's always a pleasure to have you here. Again, the website is emarotta.com. You can check Dave out there and be in touch with him. And we look forward to your next visit on The Shilling Show. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
All right, News Radio 1070 WINA, that is going to wrap it up for us today. Remember, tomorrow on The Shilling Show, the day we've been waiting for, you know, he had to cancel one time in the past because he had some travel plans that were a little mixed up. But Brian Moore, candidate for president of the United States on the Socialist Party ticket. You will not hear him anywhere else in Central Virginia, but right here on The Shilling Show, where, you know, we really do welcome all points of view. We've proven it out time and time again. If you want to be on The Shilling Show and you have an interesting story to tell, we'd love to hear from you. Rob S. at WINA.com. We will see you soon on The Shilling Show. Have a great day.